Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Happy September. And welcome, everyone. Welcome, everyone, to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, also affectionately known as WUF. I'm Salima Malson. I use the pronouns she and her. And it is my joy and my privilege to welcome you and to help guide this morning service. When we say welcome, we mean welcome to everyone, whether you're here in the sanctuary or at home watching on your favorite screen. Regardless of who you are, where you're from, where you've been, whom you love, or how you identify your gender, if you do. And whether you come this morning with an overflowing heart that is overflowing with joy or something else, we are so glad to have you with us. Also, whether you've been coming to church your whole life or if you're just now dipping your toe in the water of religious community, we're also glad to share our time with you today. I'm reminded of the words of the author Alice Walker, who said, "Love is not concerned with whom you pray or where you spent the night you ran away from home. Love is concerned that the beating of your heart should kill no one." This morning's service will be focused on what it means to believe and how what we believe and what we may have believed in the past shapes and informs our daily life. And it will be our delight to hear from Alana Bellwood and Stephanie Shapiro, both remarkably strong and creative young women, young moms, who discovered in the course of becoming friends that they had come from very similar backgrounds, both raised in closely governed and tightly doctrined evangelical churches. This morning, as part of our This We Believe series, to hear their stories. But before we go there, let's welcome Trish Neitzel, who will share this month's news from WUF's Board of Trustees.
That up close.
Okay.
And you to get closer.
Okay.
Maybe.
This is my first time here at WUF to be at the podium, so we'll work it out. Okay, so the Board of Trustees held their monthly meeting this past week. One of the topics discussed was the abrupt departure of our longtime maintenance company. I'm sure we're all aware that over the years, they had become complacent in their duties. They were given the opportunity to bid on a detailed revised job description offered at a higher compensation, which they initially agreed to do so, but within 24 hours submitted their notice instead, and it went into effect immediately. So, WUF went into action. Volunteers stepped forward to keep our building running while options were weighed, and Rick Tangeman met with three professional maintenance companies. A new 12-month contract with Cirrus Commercial Cleaning began this past Thursday. The contract was negotiated. An inspection occurred on Friday with positive results. So I think you guys will see they're doing a much better job than what we have dealt with in the past. Also at the meeting, Howard Baldwin discussed two tools to make credit card charges possible at events. The addition of an app form from Tithely Breeze and a tablet to use the credit card reading app for events like auctions and coffee houses. And a motion was made and approved unanimously by the board. On another note, the board's annual retreat will occur Saturday, September 14th, The half-day event will be held at the home of board member Hillary Greenbaum, where we will tackle issues concerning all things having to do with WOOF. And last, mark calendars, because we will be celebrating the return of Reverend Tracy on Sunday, October 6th. The sabbatical team is working on the details now. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Trish. So now let's begin by standing together in body or spirit to sing from the Gray Hymnal, number 347, Gather the Spirit. Don't sit down while you're up. Just take a minute to turn and greet someone, that maybe somebody you don't know, especially somebody you don't know.
Yeah. As Hazel.
Is everyone awake? I was thinking maybe you're drooping a little bit. I really wanted to give you a little pep, a little boost of audible caffeine. As Hazel lights our chalice today, we are reminded that it is a symbol of our community in one spirit with the single goal of creating a safe place that creates a great place for the world.
In your way, yet you stay while the noise is all around you. Progress was made in good faith. I won't let them take it from you. Be as it may, night and day, from all the love and all the virtue. Bide in your time, broken stride, are we ever gonna mend you? All that we have, here and now, and I'm counting on a breakthrough. Peace be with you. Much the same as the darkness that you've been through. Carry the weight of the flame, it burns brighter than you meant to. Now we remain in the haze and the heaviness of truth.
Ages, and Izzy Hart, director of our RE program, will you come forward and take it from here?
Any kids who want to come up to the front and join us who are out in the audience, here they come. Hi, everybody. Thanks for being patient while that happened. Kids are so spontaneous. My name's Liz, or some folks call me Izzy, and my pronouns are all over the place. And as you can see or smell, some of us have not showered in a few days. Sorry about that. That's because we've been here at Wolf for family camp. Many adults and our kids and some kidless adults stayed here at Wolf for the second Wolf family camp on our beautiful grounds. We were lucky to have classes and activities led by some really wonderful people in our congregation, including we did some light painting with Rick. Virginia led the kids in learning how to do the hand gestures for Spirit of Life. We did writing with Salima, yoga with Nicole, and Jean took us for a walk in our woods to show us all of the beautiful things that are growing and living here on our grounds. This year at Wolf, we are really trying to show our kids what good stewardship looks like and guide them in the ways that they can connect with nature all around us. We're creating a new curriculum inspired by world religions, Braiding Sweetgrass, and sponsored by the legacy of Sue Alperin. Sorry, I miss her a lot, and she would have really loved seeing our kids thrive here on the grounds. As the first spiritual home for a lot of our kids, we want to inspire them to look for the stories that they can find in nature and their place in the world. And part of that is through giving them a voice. So without further ado, I'll present to you the kid-led and kid-starring play, The Missing Berries.
Westfield's Unitarian Universalist Fellowship is our spiritual home, but these beautiful grounds are home to many other creatures as well. Chipmunk, panda, rabbit, raccoon, deer, wolf, and hedgehog. Mouse. One summer day, the animals were playing in the forest. They were having so much fun, but the day was passing quick.
I'm getting hungry.
So they went to go pick some berries. But when they got to the berry patch, they were shocked.
The berries are all gone.
Oh no!
The animals searched high and low, under logs and up in trees, and couldn't find the berries. As they grew hungrier and also crankier, they began to blame each other and fight. But then, someone had an idea.
Let's go check the humans.
So the animals went to the buildings and followed their noses and sniffed around to try and find the berries. One animal with a particularly good sniffing nose went right up to Noreen.
I picked all the berries, but guess what? I used them to make a pie.
The animals and humans all rejoice.
Okay, we're
rejoicing.
You can join us after the service for lunch and pie in the costume room and on the back patio. You're welcome to stay and talk with the family campers about what they did this year.
Good job, kids. We'll be serving some burgers and salad and baked beans and pie out in the coffee room and the patio after the service. And now you can form archways across the aisles, standing or sitting, and we will sing our kids out to their, or our animals, our critters, out to their classroom.
So there we have it, our future. Pie and berries and everything. Some say it is poetry that helps us balance the beauty and the brokenness of this incredible world we share with each other. Each week during our time together, we take a few minutes to celebrate and to honor both the joys and the sorrows that make up our lives, all of our lives, our own, those we know and love, and those not so much. In her poem, The Thing Is, Ellen Bass reminds us to love life, to love it even when you have no stomach for it, to say, yes, I will take you. I will love you again. So if you have a joy or a sorrow on your heart this morning, a celebration or a sadness that you would like to give attention to, I invite you to come forward and either silently or with a few words, place it into a stone and then let it go into the water that symbolizes the love and support of our community. Betsy will give us a bit of contemplative music, and I invite you now, if you are so moved, to come up this aisle, across and back.
Being out of our old home and into our new home this weekend, and also for my twin sister's healthy pregnancy and beautiful daughter.
Have an infected toe, the doctor's threatened to amputate. I don't want that, so pray for me. Thank you.
In memory of my first cousin, Mary Mitchell, just passed away at 95, and I grew up with her, and I miss her.
Placing two stones. The first one is a crystal, and it's pretty symbolic because I'm so thankful and happy to be a part of this wonderful RE program here at Wood. This is for all the kids. They're so cute. And this one is one of sadness. My daughter is rehoming my grand dog, and my heart is breaking.
Died on August 14th at age 98, and for my sister Cheryl, who died September 30th of 2023 of ovarian cancer.
I'm asking if we can all send continuing healing thoughts to Roger Golliver. I'm sure that he'll appreciate it.
To place one for all of our kids to have a healthy and safe school year.
I have happy news about a septic system, and I won't go into details.
Thank you, Frank.
This is a stone of concern for the Japanese people going through the typhoon and rainstorms and floods and mudslides this weekend.
I met my best friend at the UU Church in Logan, Utah. And he spent the last couple of years disconnected from the world, and he left it.
For my dog, who's getting older.
من آرزوی دوستی دارم برای همه ملت جهان.
I hope for friendly feelings for all of the people in the world.
خوشحالم از اینکه پسرای خوبم و زندگی خوبی داشته باشن همیشه.
And I hope that my sons, who are very good sons, have very happy lives.
Thank you all for sharing. And I will deposit one last stone for any and all the joys and sorrows that were left unexpressed this morning.
And now, settling in just a little deeper for a few more moments of quiet time for reflection, meditation, or prayer, as you may wish, I invite you to consider another poem. This is one of my own. It's titled Revising Religion. It goes like this. Bent over, kneeling, silenced by the requirement for a proper voice, my heart beating the only rhythm it knew, mea culpa, mea culpa. Mea culpa. I begged for a sign, a light, a way to see my own face. But stained glass, shadowed in candle flame, diminished even the rough sketch that I carried for reference, diminished everything but my despair. On the last fray of a rope flung across the sill of a high window, I descended into a crowded, noisy marketplace, pushing, shoving, struggling to cross bridges jammed with relics abandoned and too twisted to reclaim. Until finally, without knowing how I got there, I felt my way into the shelter of a deep and silent forest, where every now and then a slender shaft of light opened a small window to joy, where tear-filled streams revealed mirrors in the darkness. And here I came to rest free, to the quiet beside those clear streams, to lie quiet beside those clear streams and drink from them and bathe in them, delighting in my own reflection, renewed and restored, my body redeemed, rejoicing in its poetry, my soul bearing witness to its own light. And so we come to our message today, as promised. It is from Alana Bellwood and Stephanie Shapiro, titled Rewriting Our Religion Narrative. Please welcome Alana and Stephanie. Alana's family converted to the Evangelical Church when her parents found their belonging and solace. She was quite young at the time and was heavily involved in worship and prayer ministry and intended to one day grow into a teaching pastoral role. But she left the faith while in college, as the teachings about women and queer people began to conflict with her personal story and conscience. Her deconstruction journey, which she'll talk about this morning, has been largely without mentors, long, painful, but ultimately hopeful. Alana is excited to connect with others about their personal redefinitions and expand understanding and empathy to evangelicals here in our community. Stephanie grew up in the Evangelical Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Colorado Springs, Colorado. Her evangelical childhood began at birth, as Christianity was integrated into every part of her life, including Christian school, weekly Bible studies, youth group, and home church. Like Alana, she began questioning parts of her faith in college, and eventually left the church in Los Angeles in her mid-20s. Today, she carries both positive and negative memories of her evangelical upbringing with her and would love the opportunity to discuss this very unique experience with other woofers who might relate. Stephanie and Alana, please.
Thank you.
I lost my piece of paper. So
it's
we'll
okay, we'll share.
Okay.
Am I on? Can you all hear me?
Nope.
No? test.
No.
No? My green light's on.
Say again?
Okay. Now?
Well, we're working on that mic. I'm going to start with our open question.
Please.
How many of you here came from another faith background than UU?
Woo!
That's a lot. I mean, that's most of us.
Almost all.
Fantastic. And how many of you came from evangelical background? Okay. So this conversation is going to come from two perspectives. Partially, we want to connect with people who had similar upbringing to let you know that you're not alone, and that whether your deconstruction process was long and hard or whether it was simply short and joyful, we still want you to be able to feel free to come and talk to us about that journey and perhaps start a group about it. And then also we want to expand some understanding about the evangelical counterculture to people who may be curious about it.
And one quick note, can you hear me now?
No.
What? Because I'm loud. Okay, I'll be loud. That's fine.
Do you want to use the mic?
Okay. It is green, I know.
It is green, Jim.
Can we just use this?
That too.
Now. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Almost there.
We're so close.
Okay, so I'll continue then.
Well, I do want to say one thing is that this conversation, we've had a lot of conversations about this conversation. It's not to critique. I mean, some of you are probably wondering, why did you leave? Well, we're going to talk a little bit about why we left, but really what this is what we carry with us. because you can't really, you always carry things with you from your childhood. So that's what this conversation is what we have on the screen back here is the things that resonated, interestingly, with both of us. And we want to talk through, just touch on what these things are, and then we want to invite you to continue the conversation with us, which is, I think, the most important part of what we're wanting to do here, is to invite you into, even after this service, but even maybe a few sessions where we have coffee or we, you know, join together and talk about all of the many aspects of the evangelical upbringing.
I believe I lost my piece of paper. This conversation is just the beginning. So if you wouldn't mind joining us, if you have questions or comments or just want to, like, say, hey, me too, we're going to be in the library downstairs, probably eating food just like the rest of you. So please come and chat with us. And we'll talk a little bit why we left, very briefly. I personally was heavily involved as a teenager. I loved my God, and leaving was the... My niece is being so cute. Leaving was the hardest thing I've ever done. It was the most difficult, scary decision I've ever made in my entire adulthood. I don't regret it, but it was very scary, and I felt like I was risking a lot, including my family at the time. And that was very hard. But it was worth it to be honest to myself about who I was made to be and who this slim image of a woman that God says is right should be. Those two just didn't match up. And when I looked at myself in the mirror, I decided that if there's a God, he made me like this. And if there's a loving God, he did not make me to fit into this mold over here that hurts, that hurts me. So I decided to leave.
Similarly, when I was in college, I met a mentor named Wayne who was very liberal, and I was raised very conservative. And he started bringing up questions for me, even though he was a minister. So he was a very liberal minister, but that's where it started for me, being like, wait a second, do I believe all of these concepts? And then as I became a young adult in my 20s, there's a few big things, such as the salvation story, the need, the born of sin and need for salvation, that no longer resonated with me. This idea that there's one way to God no longer resonated with me. And I came to a point where it was more that wasn't resonating than it was the principles that were. So that's kind of what led to, it was a multi-year process for both of us of really peeling back. And I think Alana's actually done more deep dive and work on, you know, deconstructing these ideas and these principles and really taking what we still want to carry with us and leaving what we don't. But yeah, kind of an interesting story where we both look back and said, you know what, this is not, there's more negative than positive. But what I want to shift to is, what did we carry? What do we think is something that was really meaningful for us? So I want to ask you, Alana, about commitment and service. And how, in your experience, was commitment demonstrated and service, and how does that stay with you today in your life?
So I don't know if this is true, but it was a constant refrain in my household and in our church that hospitality was the number one most repeated commandment in the Old Testament. And that was something that my parents and my church took very seriously. And it is something that, I mean, this week while we've been moving, my parents have been driving all the way down from Vancouver to, like, just bring us lunch, or just bring us a lamp that we love, or just helping out, everything they can do to help out. And if I have friends or family that don't have a place to go for Easter or Christmas, my parents don't ask questions. Everyone is invited. When I was a teenager, my house was the place where all the teenagers could go to feel safe. In fact, my parents ended up adopting a teenager who was kicked out of her home later on in life. Like, that is such a huge level of hospitality that my church encouraged and supported, and my family just beautifully illustrated for me, and one that I carry with me today as, like, the epitome of being a beautiful human.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I was asking this question to myself, what were a couple memories of how service was demonstrated? The first one that showed up was the special needs group that my parents were heavily involved in. So I had two different Christian experiences that I recall. One in Tulsa was kind of a community-led, more organic, like a smaller Christian community. And then I went to a mega church in Colorado Springs, right? Very different experiences. The mega church had a lot of resources, and they had a special needs community where they would bus in folks with developmental disabilities from all around the city, bring them in, feed them a meal, and have a program for them. And that's something that my dad is deeply passionate about, that community. And so they volunteered pretty intensely every Sunday, and they brought us into that. So I remember leading the young adults and doing a serving food and cleaning up and being a part of that experience as something that's just what my family did. I think that's such an important part of our upbringing is saying, how are we giving back? And what does that look like in action? The other thing that came to mind was small groups. And in order to do small groups or Bible studies or cell groups, whatever you call them, folks have to volunteer. They have to give their homes. Often they're providing refreshments. They're preparing the conversation and the dialogue. And all of that was also something that people had a level of commitment where that was expected. That was what you're supposed to do, and that's what people did. So those are two things that came to mind.
We share so well,
right?
talking about deep connections and vulnerability, how did you experience prayer?
Ooh, prayer. So when I think about some of the most powerful moments in my childhood, it was where people are praying for other people. So it was very common for people to go up afterwards and say, can you pray for me? Or in these small groups. And what was happening was, A, the person being asked for prayer was being very vulnerable. This is my struggle. This is what I'm going through. Can you speak words of wisdom. It was Bible truth. It was quoting a shared set of beliefs. When you do that, there's an immediate unity. Even the Bible says, where two or more are gathered, there I will be. That was quoted all the time. So this idea that I'm speaking the truth that we've agreed upon into your life was extremely powerful. And also it was one of the most profound times I remember of my dad being vulnerable and sharing his desires for my life. His love for me was through prayer, and that was acceptable. That was an avenue where men that aren't always encouraged to be vulnerable could be emotional and quite vulnerable.
Absolutely. My dad cried at two things, Mel Gibson movies and deep prayer for things that he cared about, especially for his family. And that was, it was so important to see your father figure being emotional. It's something we don't see in regular secular society very much, especially
yep.
our generation.
On that note, how did your evangelical community uniquely support people? How did they support each other?
So my churches, both the churches that I spent my childhood in, they were very focused on if you were involved in anything, be it lay leader, worship team, or even working in the food bank that they had, you were required to be in a small group of accountability. And that kind of group work where you are not just being vulnerable and honest, but holding someone else accountable for their actions or their words, how it affected the greater community, how it affected you, that is not something you find in the secular world in very many places, right, outside of a church. And the evangelical church does that very, very well. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a lot of shame involved in that and fear involved in that. Like, we're not saying that any pieces of this are perfect or beautiful because we've left, right? Mm-hmm. But there, from that, I take, like, men can be vulnerable. Men can be held accountable, which is something that I needed to remind myself a lot later in adulthood as my life progressed as a woman. And that is something that my church really helped create, these special spaces mm-hmm. for people to be held accountable and to grow.
And how did that impact, this is something I just thought of, how did that impact your ability or your feeling of loneliness or lack of loneliness?
I mean, that is such an interesting, the loneliest period of my life was after I left, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to cry. It's fine.
But if you do, it's okay.
My parents were very upset and angry when I left, and I didn't really have as much access to my younger siblings afterward for a little while, which was very hard because I'm very close to them. And losing my best friend, Jesus, my invisible friend, Jesus, that was very, very hard. And I never felt lonely because not only did I have this personal Superman behind me, who I talked to constantly. I looked like a crazy person walking down the road, just constantly praying, right? I also always had someone I could call up. And a lot of times it was adults. Like, one of the things that I had in the church was I had adult mentors. Mm-hmm. I didn't just have peers. I had people, women, who I could go and talk to and be like, hey, you're in my virginity accountability group. We had some spicy accountability groups. But I could talk to those women about anything, including things that I couldn't talk to my parents mm-hmm. about. And that level of support was just, I was never truly alone.
Yep. That's amazing to think about now, because I do think that one of the things that I'm so aware of is our isolation in today's culture. And I'm seeing what the evangelical church did, like the specific things they did to create connections between people. Those were all intentional. Like, you don't just gather people and be like, and now we're close, and now we're connected. That's not how it works. So what they did is they would have these partner groups and this mentoring and this accountability and this vulnerability. And if you combine all of those things together, common language, common beliefs, it creates a sense of belonging. And a sense of connection that I think is very potent, and it's hard to replicate.
Exactly. I think one, just if I can add on to that, we've talked a lot about the God-shaped hole, which is, if you are an evangelical, we're an evangelical, you know what that is. The God-shaped hole is this internal yearning that every human has for God, right? For particularly Jehovah, right? And I personally think coming out of that was a community-shaped hole, which is the reason why I'm here. Right, I am here because of that deep need for that kind of connection. I sought you people out of memory of what I had before, and boy, you guys don't disappoint. I think mine's cutting out, but I think I'm good. So we talked a lot about, you and I together, about intellectual study and growth mindset, and this is something that a lot of non-evangelicals don't understand about the evangelical church. Because there is no pope there to talk you through what you should believe or tell you what God says, there's a lot of interpretation of the Bible. So Bible study was very focused on an intellectual, like, I had a pastor who went back to school and got a PhD in Aramaic and Greek, right? And he had a 6 a.m. service where he went through passage by passage the entire Bible. It took him like 12 years, but he did it. And he would go back to the original text and really talk this through. And it really, this intellectual side of spirituality was something that actually gave me the tools to leave. And I think that is a fantastic thing. Like, I want my kids to have the tools to leave my spiritual mindset if they want to, if they choose to, right? And I really value that. But how did you experience a growth mindset or intellectual study in church, and how does it affect you today?
The first thing that came to mind was the Bible study my parents went to with Pearl and Hugh. I remember this. We would go to their house, and they would have a kid, I don't know if it was specifically for kids, but it would be printouts with questions and reflections on the Bible. So I would read a passage by myself, by the way. This was Stephanie at home having her own little quiet time in Bible study, which was very encouraged and very much, you know, it doesn't say we reflect on the Bible. It's say we dig deep and we ask questions and we make it our own. So I would sit at home and answer these questions and read the passages in my little pink Precious Moments Bible. Literally remember that? And then we would come back and discuss it. And so it was a lot of... Now keep in mind, the discussion was, like, you can ask questions within the appropriate, like, as long as it's within the belief system. So if you're starting to ask questions that are like, ooh, I'm not sure I like that part, that's where it gets dicey. Mm-hmm. Not everyone wants to hear those questions, right? And that kind of led to my decision of coming away. But I will say that when you were in small groups, you were there to be challenged. You were there to say, are you growing in, so many phrases, are you growing in God? Is God leading your life? How can we be better? How can we do better? How can we serve more? All of that was integrated into all of the teachings. And to this day, I have that mindset of, how can we do better?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
How was growth discussed and encouraged in the church?
We haven't talked at all about Christian music yet.
Ooh.
Let me tell you, I just spent a month re-listening to all my favorite Christian tunes. I was not allowed to listen to secular music. I wasn't allowed to read Harry Potter. I wasn't allowed to watch regular TV or news. I was only allowed to listen to Christian music. I didn't hear the Beatles until I was 18. But there is a lot of Christian music out there, especially during the early aughts when I was listening to it. And going back and listening to, like, Reliant K, right? I mean, none of their songs about women aged very well. But almost all of their songs mention forward motion and growth and talking about your walk as a place that you are going toward a better you, a closer to God you, right? Every single song was either about praise God or about the walk being something that you are constantly working on, right? DC Talk talks about that constantly, about the What If I Stumble song, right? Like that idea that we are in progress, that we don't sit on our laurels, like, oh, look, I did a good thing, now I'm fine, right? You are constantly trying to improve, is the best thing I got from Christianity. And I take that with in my atheist heart, my deep, deep, dark atheist heart, I really hold that truth close.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to mention, were you part of the phenomenon, the purpose-driven life? Did we talk about that book? Okay.
Yeah.
So one thing I did... I got it. Shout out. One thing I want to mention was that book blew everything out of the water, and I think it's very relevant today, too, is that you are called to this earth. You are here for a reason. You uniquely have a purpose, and that was told to us in so many different ways over and over and over. I still believe that today. Like, I still think every child needs to understand their purpose. And it may not be one purpose, it may be multiple purposes. But we came here with gifts, and we are, I wouldn't say obligated, although that's kind of what they said. Don't bury your talents.
Exactly.
But that's why you're here, is to discover your gifts and to use them, to find out what is your purpose. They did a wonderful job of that, and I would love that for our young people too, is really uncovering what their purpose is in their unique life. Do you want to say something about the book that we read and the author?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
It's kind of where this came from.
Yeah, absolutely. There is a book called The Exvangelicals by Sarah McCammon. She is an NPR she's an NPR journalist. She is the one they have following the Trump campaigns. So she's really fantastic at interacting with lots of people who don't have the same belief system that she has, because she comes from that perspective, right? She has a lot of shared language, which is fascinating and interesting, and she has some really wonderful pieces of information for people who are going through their deconstruction process or have gone through their deconstruction process. I had no idea that there was a word for what I had gone through, and it was incredible to learn that there was there's a whole culture of people like us that I could fall in line with. There's music. There's deconstruction songs, right, that I had no idea. People, like, processing, you can see how much I'm into music. I'm really processing what they went through and redefining themselves afterward. Like, I love that. And Sarah McCammon does a beautiful job of, like, explaining her path, explaining where the evangelical movement came from, and being really kind to everyone involved. I think one of the best things I got from that was people joined, my parents joined the evangelical church, not for boogeyman reasons, but because they really wanted a community that supported them in their parenting.
Yes.
And after the 60s, there was a big backlash, a conservative backlash, and the evangelical church was part of that. And, you know, you're always going to have those kinds of backlashes, and my parents, maybe they got swept up in that, I'm not sure, but they were happier in that framework. Mm-hmm. And I think I have a lot more empathy now for my parents and their adult peers after reading that book. It really helps me understand that whole movement perspective in a really fantastic way.
Yeah. The Jesus movement was a countercultural response to the hippie free love movement. And it's so interesting to think. They saw people releasing rules and saying we don't need rules and rigidity. And so they created structure because that's what people needed. And it's such an interesting thing to look at that dichotomy and say, what drew so many people in the 70s and 80s and moving into the 90s? And she did a really good job of the history, the author in that book. So really appreciate that. Are we at time, Sulima?
I'm thinking that we are going to run a little over time. Is that okay with everybody? Maybe 5 minutes? And if you have to leave, you can.
Sure.
But let's just wind it down, and we'll be done in about 11:35.
Yeah. The last thing we wanted to talk about was shared identity and culture. And I wanted to ask, what would you say, Alana, was the energy of the music? No. How would you describe the evangelical shared identity? That includes music, sermon, all of that.
So because the evangelical movement was largely trying to be countercultural, they really had to create enough media and enough life for people to live within their bubbles, right? And it was incredible how welcoming you could feel when everyone spoke the same language, right? Like we would talk about our walk, and we would talk about raising the flag, and we would all these buzzwords that immediately made you feel like, oh, I came from across town or across the states, but I'm still immediately welcome because I understand the language, right? Mm-hmm. We have that to a degree as well in all communities. All communities have that kind of shared language. But evangelical church, like, they really policed it and really encouraged it as a way to kind of raise the flag to each other, or raise the flag. It means, like, indicate that they are evangelicals to other people. And, like, the fish bumper sticker is one of those pieces, right? It made people feel like they belonged, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a club with almost a secret code, right? Mm-hmm. And that was really cool. One of the great things about talking with you, Stephanie, so many times is like we would slip in a term that I haven't used in years, yep. and we would both be like, whoa, it's that! It's been so long since they've heard that. What a flashback! But it made us feel bonded, even though we weren't part of that culture anymore. Yeah. It's a really powerful tool.
Mm-hmm. And for me, going back to music, the music when I walked, especially at New Life, the mega church, when I walked into that church, it was like a rock concert. It was lively. People were celebrating. They were dancing. It was all emotion. It was music that was meant to move your heart. That I have never found. I've never found a replacement for that. It's a very intense and very personal experience. And I just remember that being a big part of the culture. And sometimes that's all I would go for, right? Like the sermon, but it's the music that would draw you in. I know we're wrapping up, so I want to ask our kind of final question, which is, this is a big question. For what are you the most grateful for from the culture? What would you say you're most grateful for?
I think I'm the most grateful for that growth mindset of constantly trying to be a good person and constantly trying to change my community and change myself. I think that that helps me in every other way, but it also helped me leave. And I needed to leave to be a complete person. I needed that. And I'm really glad to hopefully pass that down to my children.
Yeah. I think I'm most grateful for the intentional community. And it was folks were brought together for a specific purpose and to really grow and share their lives together. And I carry that with me in a really sweet place. So what we'd like to do is we want to continue this conversation. There's so much more to unpack and to share, and I want to hear from you all that either know folks that are in the evangelical world now or came from that world. So, and also if you are online, please do email me if you're interested in being a part of a community, even if it's a short term, we might meet for a week or two, or it's something that's a longer term group. Please let me know if you're interested. There's my email. For today, we're going to be in the library. We'll probably grab some food and just kind of relax and see if anyone would love to come and chat with us.
And for anyone online, you can post comments or questions that you may have. I'll gather those from Lex after this service, and we'll chat about those downstairs in the library.
The library is the space between the kitchen and Forest Hall.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim. Thank you. The one with the books.
I don't know that we can thank you enough, but thank you. Close this morning by singing together a song that speaks to everything that we've spoken to this morning. It is number 318 in the hymnal, and its title is We Would Be One. This morning, let us remember that even though the flame is gone, it remains in our hearts until we meet again. Let's stand as we always do, form circles, and sing ourselves out with Carry the Flame of Peace and Love.